Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. This week, we tackle these questions. Why has the news gotten so hacky? How can you tell when a man acting creepy about his daughter's virginity is actually telling on himself? Just ask T.I. And why should you always follow your white bean dip truth? Stick around to hear Alyssa Mastromonaco, Kieran Deal, Tian Tran, and Priyanka Arabindi answer these questions and more. This week marks the beginning of several weeks of public impeachment hearings, during which the American people will hear testimony that sounds a lot like penthouse letters, but instead of about sex, it's about treason. Can't wait to wake up every morning and smell that fresh hell. But in the meantime, it's lazy writing week in the simulation that dictates our reality. We have the president's son who wrote a book about how liberals are triggered about everything, being so triggered by right-wing protesters he had to leave a book event. Donald Trump Jr., welcome to the resistance. Yet another scammer in the scammiest administration of all time, a White House advisor who's breaking boundaries for Jewish Nazis everywhere. And Rudy Giuliani, the man at the center of the impeachment scandal, wants to start a fucking impeachment podcast. Rudy, as a podcaster, it's harder than it sounds. To break that down and more, I'm going to call my friend, former White House Deputy Chief of Operations under President Obama, and one of the world's leading Grateful Dead theologians, Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Hello.
Hey, Alyssa, I have a quick question for you.
Yes.
You sound so impatient already. What would the Grateful Dead say about what we're going through as a country right now? You're one of the world's leading Grateful Dead theologians, which is how I introduced you this week.
So I'm going to say that Robert Hunter, one of the great lyricists of all time, probably put it best in one of my favorite songs, The Greatest Story Ever Told. Ready for this one?
Yes.
Tell me you don't think this just sums it up in a nutshell if you're Donald Trump watching the impeachment hearings right now.
Okay.
You can't close the door when the walls caved in.
Amen.
Amen, right? Isn't that a good one?
That is a really good one. Amen. Amen. So here's the thing. Like, right now, we're sitting in a recording studio, and some guy who has stolen Walter Cronkite's voice is testifying that Donald Trump is doing treason on Capitol Hill.
And other crimes.
All the crimes. But there's other stuff kind of swirling around that honestly, to me, sounded like bad writing. You know, like, so let me start with my favorite story from this week that is not about the impeachment. Donald Trump Jr. wrote a book called Triggered. About how liberals are trying to silence conservatives and shout them down and keep them from speaking. And then at a book event in California, Donald Trump Jr. was chased from the stage by conservative protesters. I mean, look, it's a little obvious, you know?
I mean, it's on the nose, right? I mean, like, you couldn't, like, if you were... Aaron, in a position where you were receiving television scripts and someone wrote an episode that they submitted to you, which was like, loony conservative son writes book called Triggered and then gets triggered.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds a little bit Curb Your Enthusiasm to me, like a Curb episode, but a lot of stuff would have to happen in between us hearing what the title of the book was and him actually being triggered. Like, it would have to start out and we would just kind of register it in the back of our minds. And then the finale, when we hear the like, bump, 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 ba-da-da, and then it all is like, oh, okay, he got triggered. That's the joke. We all arrived at it at the same time. But this just felt very like messy, you know?
Yeah, agree.
What was your favorite, a little bit too on the nose story from this week?
My fave, I think, has to be an NBC News story, title of which is Bolton suggests some of Trump's foreign policy decisions are guided by personal interest.
Oh my God.
Can you come on? Like, first of all, here's just like one. Give me a fucking break. Of course, this is true. Like, everyone knows this is true. The mouse in my house knows this is true. But like, we don't actually have a mouse. I don't know why I said
that. Okay, I was going to say, you've got your cats are fucking up.
My cats would be fully asleep.
Like, what is their point if you have a mouse? Like, that is literally the only good thing that cats bring to the table besides love and adorability. But that's the only like function. Anyway, good. I'm glad you don't have a real house. I'm glad it's figured.
No, but it's like, I'm glad that John Bolton can get paid a lot of money to go talk to rich people at Morgan Stanley. And in a closed door meeting, be like, hey guys, here's the inside scoop. It's fucked up in there. But then also like you're saving all your good juice for the book deal you're getting, but like crimes are being committed, but you don't seem overly concerned with that right now. And you'll tell this stuff to people at Morgan Stanley, but not Congress. I mean, it's just like, come on, don't make us do all the work.
You know what I hate about this story is that it is forcing me to like root for John, to be like, yeah, John,
totally.
Do it, John Bolton. Yes, exactly. I feel like I am coaching a really stubborn toddler to go poop on the potty. And it's like, come on, yay, you did it.
You can do it.
Yeah, it's like a basic thing that everybody who works for the administration should be doing, which is admitting that what is happening is a danger to democracy and that people who are in a position of power to do something about it should do something about it, or they're shirking their responsibilities to their country and to the world. So when he does these little things like, oh, it's, you know what? Seems a little bad. We're like, yeah, good job, John Bolton. I hate the condescending, like over the top, like fake cheer. It's exhausting to me, but we have to do it. There's no way.
Also, like what the fuck was it? It was his, how he told everyone there he had had a resignation letter in his desk drawer for 3 months. See something, say something, bro. Like, okay. This isn't just about you.
Also, he has letters in his desk drawer and not candy. Like, what is wrong with you? Every single time I've ever had a desk, it has been, I know, every single time. This is like an era. What is going on? It's an era of like letters and memos and notes taken in meetings. And it's like,
or also, if you're watching impeachment today, you see that the wide employment of the WhatsApp.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, that just seems very like Europeans on a group vacation to me.
It's like it's Wally World national policy, national security.
I cannot believe that I've been reduced to being like, John Bolton, you're my only hope. You're like the Obi-Wan of, it's so, ugh, it makes me feel actually sick.
What makes me feel sick?
What?
To know
what?
That he's probably going to fucking let us down.
Yeah, he probably is. And trees are going to die for his dumbass book. And trees are going to die for this, John. Like, fuck off. Just do the right thing and don't write a book and try to profit off it. One of my favorite stories this week, and I thought about you when I first read it, because I know that you have talked about the vetting process before.
Oh, yes. This is delish.
So another NBC News story from Tuesday. There is a senior Trump administration official named Mina Chang, who, it turns out, quote unquote, embellished her resume. So that's the headline. But the real juice is really, really funny. She not only embellished her resume, said she went to Harvard when really she just like went to a 7-week course that is not a thing that you graduate from. You just have attended it. She said that she spoke at the Democratic and Republican conventions when really she spoke at other events in the same cities around the same times that those things were happening. She also made up a fake Time magazine cover with her face on it.
Now, we know who she learned that shit from.
I know. know. It's sort of like every corporation is sort of made in the image and likeness of its leader. Every government, the same deal. I wonder how many other Trump administration officials have fake time. I wonder if like a bunch of people yesterday were like, well, fuck, this isn't going to work anymore. And they went home and they crumpled up their fake time magazine covers. I wonder if they tried to mock up like a Harper's. They're like, nobody's going to guess. Nobody's going to check.
You know what? It was probably like the filter in the photo booth at the White House Christmas party.
Oh my God. That is extremely feasible. Extremely feasible. But the thing that was like really disturbing to me was like, first of all of this stuff was easily disprovable. It sounds like in all the reporting I heard on it yesterday, the reporters sounded kind of exasperated that this wasn't caught before. And this is actually an indicator of it would be easy for somebody to fake their way into really high levels of government. Mina Cheng was in the State Department and she was up for a job where she would have managed a $1 billion budget before her nomination was withdrawn with no explanation in September. How easy would it be for somebody who is, as Tommy Vietor pointed out on Twitter yesterday, how easy would it be for foreign intelligence to infiltrate the Trump administration?
Pretty fucking easy. But here's like a quick give on her resume. She addressed both the DNC and the RNC. Why would that ever be the case?
I don't know.
2016, why would that ever, if I saw that on someone's resume, I'd be like, tell me more. Like I would Google that shit in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Because what it also, why is this person, by the way, who wants to have like this big crazy job and was in the State Department and is like, why is she giving political speeches? She doesn't seem at all like a political person. So what the fuck would she have to say at these conventions?
Uh-huh.
Like, it's not a lot. Like embellishing, the other thing that's funny is like embellishes resume. Embellishes is saying, I know how to make things add up in an Excel spreadsheet. Okay, that's embellishing.
Yeah, embellishing is saying that I am like functionally conversational in Spanish and I'm not. I can read
what
it, but I can't talk.
She did was lie.
Yeah.
Wasn't an embellishment. It was a lie. Many lies, pages of lies.
Mm-hmm. We need to have an administration that just deals with the words that we use for things that aren't true, because embellishment is totally different from fabrication. She fabricated a resume. I think we need to crack down on people using thesauruses when it comes to lying, because they don't, all the words don't mean the same thing. Alyssa, the reason I thought about you for this story is that you went through some shit before you were getting vetted and like, because it was an intense process. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Getting vetted fucking sucks. Like it does. But if you want to work on behalf of the people of this country, you have to do it. Like the questionnaire, like this is what I don't understand. Like the job that she has isn't just like you hand your resume in and they say, great, come on board. Like there are tons of forms and she presumably, I can't see how she would have done her job without some form of security clearance. Like I just don't know how any of this stuff would have passed. Like to give everyone an example, when I was filling out my forms in late 2008, when we were filling them out, I had to prove that my dorm at the University of Wisconsin no longer exists, right?
Okay.
I had to prove that I wasn't lying because when you looked up the address, nothing was there. And like the FBI agents were pressing me on it. And I was like, I can show you on Google Earth, like where it used to be, but it's not there anymore. And it was like a fucking issue. Okay. It was an issue. The address of my dorm in 1997
wow.
was an issue. So how did none of this make it? One of the kids who worked for me had remote family in South Korea and he couldn't find their street address. And that was an issue. So I just don't understand how in this world, none of these things were an issue because none of they're all you could, every single thing she put, you could prove was untrue.
Right.
Like without a lot of research.
Right.
Like why?
It also seems like another thing, like you texted this to me last night, Alyssa, but she was kind of going around the world and like cosplaying being a humanitarian and it wasn't clear what she was doing.
Like she just wasn't doing anything.
But you know what I think it stems from? It seems pathological to me in a similar way that a pathology manifests among men of the Republican Party. And the pathology I see in the men is that they all are acting like guys that they saw being gangsters in movies. Movies that they got the totally wrong idea from. You know, like watching Rudy yes. Giuliani, it's like you're trying to act like a guy from a movie who's supposed to be bad, but you don't get that he's supposed to be bad. I think that the female analog of that is women who are trying to act like Princess Diana, but in all the wrong ways. Like, I'm going to, you know, they try to cosplay being like a princess, like an internationally beloved princess who shows up and does and like goes through the motions of doing advocacy. But really, all they really want to be is famous. They don't really actually care about the advocacy. And it just seems
it's like leave the landmines to the royals.
Yes, exactly. Leave all of this to people that are actually in a position to promote change through visibility. But if you're not already famous, you can't use visibility to promote change. You're just trying to use change to promote your own visibility. And it's very irritating. But let's talk about Rudy Giuliani real quick before we get to toast and roast. Rudy Giuliani, you know, whenever I hear that man talk, I'm like, I would love to hear him talk more. His voice is incredible. I love how spit sounds going through teeth. Rudy Giuliani wants to start an impeachment podcast. Alyssa, do you have any advice for him as a podcaster?
I mean, I say go for broke, dude.
You think he should do it?
I mean, I think I think that he will literally sink everything. Like, I can't believe that Donald Trump hasn't locked him in a closet and been like, yo, you got to stop. But like, he wants to have an impeachment podcast where what he goes blow by blow of what's going on and talks about how what he really did. I mean, it's fucking wild. Like, more power to him, I guess.
One thing I was thinking yesterday is that maybe we could try to jujitsu Rudy Giuliani's just unquenchable thirst for attention by somebody telling him that the best way for him to get the most possible attention on a lingering historical basis would be for him to actually testify against the president. Imagine how iconic that would be. Imagine
become America's mayor once again.
Exactly. Become the mayor of America again and then go to jail. And I don't want to see or hear from you ever again. Okay, let's get to toast and roast. I have one this week.
Hit me.
Okay, so I want to toast the University of Oregon Ducks women's basketball team.
Go Ducks.
First of all, the Ducks are amazing this year. They have, I think, three obvious first rounders that are starting for them. They're ranked number one in the NCAA rankings, and they just beat Team USA, which is a team of professional women's basketball players. They beat them 93-86 on their home floor. So yes, the Ducks are awesome. This does not mean that Team USA sucks. I was reading about this and I was like, should I be concerned about the Olympics? Apparently Team USA has a bunch of players that were out, but still, this is amazing that the Ducks were able to beat a team of pros. They're college students, and it's fucking awesome. I also want to remind everybody that women's basketball can be really exciting, and we're getting into the NCAA season right now. And if you want to watch the Oregon Ducks play, you can watch them play Texas Southern this weekend, and they have a big game on November 24th. They're playing Syracuse, which is also a ranked team, so that could be a fun one to watch, although the Ducks are pretty dominant, and they're probably going to win that one too. So toast.
Go Ducks.
Go Ducks.
Lady Ducks.
Do we have to call it Lady Ducks? I think we should start calling men's basketball teams Men Ducks.
No, you can call them the Men Ducks. I just wanted to be clear that we were talking about the ladies.
The Lady Ducks.
Lady Ducks.
Sure. The man Ducks. Okay. Do you have a toast or roast?
I have a toast.
Okay, let's hear it.
I'd like to toast People Magazine because they made John Legend their sexiest man alive. And one, John Legend is awesome. But also, I dream that this was People Magazine trolling Trump because he was trying to fuck with John and Christie and was like tweeting at them. And People Magazine was like, don't you dare. He's the sexiest man alive. So yay, people. Yeah.
Chrissy Teigen has been really hilarious about this too. Like, she's always a great follow on Twitter, but she's been extra funny gloating about her husband being the sexiest man alive. I think she tweeted recently, the sexiest man alive just made me a ham sandwich, and it was just perfect.
I love her.
Also, John Legend, friend of the pod. He's been on Pod Save America before. I had the pleasure of meeting him when we did a live show at the Dolby here in Los Angeles a couple years ago, and he was just great. He was exactly what you would hope for in a sexiest man alive, or maybe a president. Because I think
so. Right. So it's like, I like that they pick someone that we can really get behind.
Yeah. Right. No more Blake Shelton.
No. Bye. Canceled. Not canceled. Just bye.
Just ignored. How about that? Not
okay,
canceled.
Ignored.
Just ignored. Okay. Alyssa, thank you so much. And next week, who knows what's going to be next week? All this stuff.
Who
is
knows what color the sky will be by next week?
I hope it's not smoke gray like it is here in LA. Because the air is bad. But anyway, well, let's see what impeachment brings, and I'll talk to you in a week.
Bye.
Bye. Welcome back. We've reached the part of the show where I introduce the wonderful women who are joining me for a discussion on a topic that is serious. First, I want to welcome actor and comedian Tien Tran.
Oh, hello!
That caught you off guard.
Yeah, I wasn't ready to go first.
Sorry.
I'm here.
Gotta keep you on your toes. Tien's here. I'm so excited you're here for this episode. Up next, you can see her on NBC's Sunnyside. It is actor, comedian, and all-around construct, Kieran Deal.
All around bus face.
All around bus face.
All
just
around
a
bus
generalized
face.
Bus face.
NBC Hulu.
NBC Hulu. Oh, that's so exciting. The last time I spoke to you about Sunnyside, you were talking about a couture Taco Bell dress. Is there anything exciting coming up?
Oh, okay. So this week is, it's a Thanksgiving episode, but the thing I'm very excited about is that it's an entire like South Asian family on television with actors.
Whoa.
Yeah. So
that's awesome.
I mean, because Aziz had his parents play his parents.
Well, hard to know that they weren't actors.
I was like, and these people are actually very good actors. They can say words and lines and stuff, and they're really amazing. And it's I'm not sure that it's a South Asian family on television in a Thanksgiving episode, and it was very special to shoot and really, really cool to be part of.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I'll check it out.
That's exciting.
It's now on the Hulu.
That's
so
awesome.
You can look at the Hulu now.
And last but not least, I want to welcome for the, I think, third time. Thank goodness we've gotten her three times. Crooked Media's own Priyanka Arabindi.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here.
I'm always excited to be here.
Woo. Yay. This is a topic that is serious for a lot of people. I'm going to be doing a lot of childish giggling. I'm just going to go ahead and preface it.
Probably same.
Because like...
Oh, I for sure will.
I grew up in a house where it's like we didn't talk about sex stuff at all. Like, because of Catholicism and also like generalized Midwestern reticence about it. And so this isn't necessarily going to be me talking about my own sex life, but just anything around sex sometimes makes me like giggle. And it's not because it's not serious, and it's just because I'm an idiot. So the idea of virginity is something that has been in the news lately because of T.I.
Father of the year, T.I.
T.I. had a really good song called What You Know, and the chorus went, "What you know about that? I know all about that." And apparently he wasn't talking about gynecology.
No.
Because having a hymen or not having a hymen is no indicator of having sex or not having had sex. And furthermore, the idea that a woman's value changes based on whether or not she's had sex is something that is massively problematic, but still present in our culture and in a lot of other cultures. So, Kieran, I want to start with you because...
Maybe a T.I. quote, another T.I. quote.
Maybe, do you know any... Do you want to bring him out, maybe?
He said dead and gone. He has a song called Dead and Gone, and I was like, oh, like your career before this quote, T.I.?
He's I on
don't
that
like
show
you.
Rhythm and Flow and I from Netflix, on that Netflix show.
I did watch that
and
show.
And I did watch that show, and I was entertained, and so...
I feel like it gave me a window into like T.I., like a primer before this, though. Because otherwise, I would have just been like, okay, like I have no real idea. But I was like, oh, I get his vibe now, like saying this. Because they took the podcast down. You can't like listen to the clip of it. But I'm like, oh, I can hear him and like see him kind of saying this.
I can absolutely hear
him. And the contrast and dichotomy between like the boy.
Oh my God, it was crazy. He's like, yeah, I know my 15-year-old son is having sex, and I don't care.
Yeah, T.I. says that he goes with his 18-year-old daughter to get an annual hymen check, which is the creepiest thing I've ever heard. I wouldn't
so creepy.
I wouldn't even let my dad go, like, with me down the tampon aisle. Like, it just, yeah. No. Ugh. Says he goes with his daughter to get a hymen check. He told the hosts on the podcast, Ladies Like Us, that he wants her to sign away her medical privacy, and he ignores the doctor's advice about not fixating on the hymen. He says, look, doc, she don't ride no horses. She don't ride no bike. She don't play no sports. Just check the hymen, please, and give me back my results expeditiously.
I'm glad. When I first heard this story, I was like, what gynecologist is allowing this to happen? And I'm glad that there's at least a little context that the doctor is like, Tia, you're this being ridiculous. Yeah. Like, I'm glad that is part of this story. Because when I first saw the headline, I was like, this doctor needs to be fired.
Fire this doctor.
Debarred? No. What's the word?
Disbarred is for lawyers.
Right.
But that for doctors.
He should be de-doctored.
Yeah.
One thing I want to get into, though, is like T.I., there was a, you know, rightfully a firestorm after he said this. People were like, A, gross. B, virginity's a construct. C, gross. D, you're a bad dad. But he's not an outlier in any way. There are a lot of men who have really patriarchal ideas about stewarding their daughters' vaginas.
And which women.
And women too. And it's something that still affects us a lot. I was thinking about, so I was in high school around Y2K, and the pop stars of our era had their virginity like relentlessly policed. And reading about the T.I. story this week reminded me of when I was like in high school and Britney Spears was like a big deal. And she was always talking about, like, you know, people were always talking about the fact that she was a virgin in a way that was really creepy. Jessica Simpson was talking about like losing her virginity to Nick Lachey. And it was all so creepy. And I want to get to the bottom of like why this is something that we're still talking about. Priyanka, do you have any theories about why we're still on this?
I mean, I have no idea actually why, because like the more I think about it, the more I read about it, I was just like, this is so insane. Like, it seems like we make it like such a big deal in, like, I mean, for our pop stars, in our like coming of age movies, mm-hmm. and books and all of it, like we kind of like make it this huge thing. And then, I mean, like you said, like a hymen breaking is no, like, there's no physical change. There's no, like, you don't wake up the next morning and like the grass is greener. Like, there's literally nothing that's different. It's so weird.
I mean, and yet, you know, you were talking about some of the articles. There's something called a 2-finger test that people are still doing.
This was so crazy to me. Reading this article, I knew like virginity, like abroad, around the world, in other cultures, that was a thing that happened. It's abhorrent. It's bad. But I didn't realize, like, here that gynecologists, there was a survey that was done. And yeah, in 2016, a survey of like 288 doctors, 10% responded that they had been asked by a parent or family member to perform the 2-finger test on a patient, basically to check if a hymen was still there to determine if this person may or may not be a virgin, because that's not like a legitimate indicator. And 34% said they had performed it themselves. Like, people are asking. I didn't realize the extent to which this was happening around me. And maybe that is like my own ignorance, but like, this is very pervasive apparently. And I guess there are a lot of false ideas about like what virginity, quote unquote, actually is or is not.
And it seems like such a violation too. Yeah. Like, it's like it's another example of your body, or it's an extreme example of your body really not being your own. The idea that somebody else can ask somebody to check on something inside of your body on behalf of their beliefs.
Yeah, this T.I. story to me was like, I mean, cringy, because like, you know, the kind of masculinity that T.I. is displaying is like this controlling, really disgusting kind. But like also, like his daughter, you're like, oh my God, she's like an 18-year-old girl. This huge story blows up. Everyone's talking about like her sex life, her hymen, her crazy dad. Like, it's like, God, I feel terrible for her. It's like, what a violation. And then I saw a story like a couple days ago that she like had unfollowed her whole family and like whatever. I was like, of course, like she doesn't want to be like that, how horrifying.
But I get why like virginity is a big, even just as a rite of passage as an adult. I mean, kids get excited when they like lose their teeth and the tooth fairy's fucking coming. It's like obviously the first time you're going to be intimate with a person, like it's a massive rite of passage. Mm-hmm. But there's a difference between something being, you know, kind of a personal rite of passage. What does that mean in terms of like the social landscape of being a high schooler or a college student? Like, where do you fit into that? Right. It's like I was in a movie, I think I was telling Aaron, I was telling you, I was in a movie, one of the first like tiny little independent films that I did, which was by an Indian American filmmaker that won like the Nora Ephron Prize at Tribeca, which means it was like well received, it was called Farrago's Bang. And it was kind of like this tongue in cheek satire about a 25-year-old girl who hadn't lost her virginity yet. And like, and that is like, I don't think that it's such an interesting thing that you know, other people get to have opinions about a woman's virginity, and there's a lot that's placed on the woman. But I think even for the individual, the young person, mm-hmm. you know, losing your virginity, like when you're intimate with somebody, these are like massive questions you face in puberty and, you know, all that shit that I'm still facing.
I think on like a social level though, for virginity, it's pushed on women so hard.
Sure.
And in a way that it's like, I think it's just a control thing. I think it's just to remind you that your body as a woman, as it like a, as a is specifically like designed for like having sex and like giving birth. Like you're just a body. Like I think it's just a reminder that you're like a piece of meat.
You're a baby factory. And
yeah,
that's it.
Just in the way that people say things like save yourself until marriage and like all the purity things and the purity ball, purity ring. I think it's a control thing, mm-hmm. just to put women in their place in this grand scheme of the patriarchy.
Right. And there's also the double standard that when it comes
totally.
To men, like
yeah.
men are shamed for being virgins. Women are shamed for not being virgins. Mm-hmm. But who are all these men supposed to be having sex with? One very tired sex worker? Like that is extremely unfair to her. She needs a vacation. But, you know, another thing is that I've seen women both shamed for being virgins and for not being mm-hmm. virgins.
Yeah.
And like, there's so much like public comment attached to people, to women's sexuality specifically, but also to men's to a different degree.
We were saying Tina Fey had that thing about like, she was like, I was 27, I couldn't give it away. Like she was on a late night show being like, I couldn't give it away. Mm-hmm. And that being this idea that there's like an ideal age or an ideal way to lose your virginity, or it's supposed to be a thing, or
yeah.
there's all those coming of age high school movies, you know, like,
right.
you know, when... I don't know. American
or,
Pie.
Or
I don't
it's supposed
know.
To be very like penis in vagina. Like that's the
that's
only,
it.
That's the only way.
Yeah. I mean, in the queer community, virginity has to be a totally different thing if it's even discussed at all. Do you? I mean, and I'm completely ignorant
yeah,
of it. So
I mean,
love to hear
I just like I think it was more the rite of passage of it was more important to me. Like finally being intimate with a woman was just like we never talked about it being like, oh my God, you lost your virginity, but more just like, oh my God, it's happening. You know, like so excited.
Right.
Just to qualify, Tien was this excited about her own pants this morning too.
Oh. You guys, I'm very excitable. So
you're like they're great.
They're
pants.
Great pants.
They're great pants. Well, you two
they
of you
are,
commented
they are
on
good
it.
Good pants.
Aaron didn't say anything till just now. So I see where you stand, Aaron. But yeah, I think I my whole thing was that I grew up in with like I went to school at a Catholic. I went to a Catholic school and really, really, really believed in waiting till marriage. For the longest time. I think I've said it on this podcast before that, like, my parents never talked about sex with me. And the only time they ever did was when my mom, while we're watching TV, unprompted, turns to me and goes, I only knew your father. And then continued watching TV.
Oh, I've heard this story.
Yes.
I know this
story.
About.
Yes.
Yeah.
I
and
love
like,
this story.
And then your sister was on that show with the ghost.
Yeah.
But that's not how she lost her virginity.
That's not how she lost
her. Because virginity's a construct.
Yeah. Kieran's ghostwriting my life right now. But like, that's the only idea I had of virginity. And then when I started realizing that I might be gay and that I was gay, I just started kind of pushing away all those like heteronormative ideals. Mm-hmm. It like just didn't apply to me personally. I know other folks in the queer community might have or let use that language of like losing their virginity. But amongst my friends and I, we never really talked about it that way. Cause like, we already lost this huge construct of what heteronormative virginity was already like. So there was no reason to kind of map it on to like our sex life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember being, I mean, that sounds very freeing.
Yeah.
Because in, I think in the hetero world, it is so fraught. And I went to a Catholic university and it was like weirdly, like I remember being a freshman and among other classmates, the women's dorms were referred to as virgin vaults. Because just not like we're going to go raid, but it was just like a kind of offhanded comment about the fact that most of the girls who were freshmen at Notre Dame were not sexually active. And part of it was because of their religious upbringing.
I dated two Catholics and they both had a lot of shame about sex. Like they just had a lot of shame, which I thought was very interesting.
I've Catholicism is not something that I currently practice. I'm very out of practice. Like,
Tell us about your shame.
When I go to church, I'm like, oh yeah, they changed the words of the prayers we're supposed to like mindlessly repeat. And I always am like saying the wrong thing. And so I just shut up during mass the one time a year I go. But you know, I think that there is a lot of shame around pleasure for women. And so like women who are, and this is maybe a bigger topic than we're going to be able to get to today, but like sexual pleasure is something that women are supposed to be ashamed of. Pleasure in eating food is something that women are supposed to be ashamed of. Pleasure, being happy with themselves is something that women are supposed to be ashamed of. Like,
is it everyone? Is it women and men or is it just the women?
No, I think it's just the women. Like there's vanity is something that's shamed in women. Mm-hmm. And vanity is obviously not a great personal trait, but there's a lot of things that are grouped in under the vanity umbrella. And I think like sexual pleasure and self-indulgence are considered things that like women, we're not supposed to like because we're supposed to be for other people. Like Tien was saying, we're not supposed to exist for ourselves. We're supposed to exist to serve other people, to give pleasure to other people.
Yeah. All of it like this. And then the kind of divide we're talking about, like, you're supposed to be a virgin and then you're supposed to not. Like, it's this weird, like, the whole standard is kind of just so, like, you're not allowed to be happy or exist or, like, do any, like, it's...
Or the virgin whore paradox.
Yeah, it's like...
The virgin whore thing. Oh, it's like when you were talking about, like, Britney Spears, it's like with the promise ring and, like, all that stuff. It's like, but, like... But then you're like on a stripper pole or you're like in this like, you know what I mean? You're in these like tiny short. You're so hypersexualized is my point. Mm-hmm. Like the nudity doesn't seem to belong to you. It's like this pure, like that puritanical, like look at it, but don't look at it, but no nipple. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's a lot of that.
But
as
with
well.
Those teen pop stars, it's like it's so publicly hypersexualized, but they still had to keep this narrative that they were virgins, so that
it's like internally, yeah. It's like so much pressure
it's
for
so
a child
much, so
in like
hard.
A in a like public
sexy,
life.
But sexy, but not sexual. Yeah. Like you have to be someone who appears like forever sexually available to everybody watching, but not sexually taken by anybody. It sort of reminds me of I was listening to a podcast about K-pop stars, and K-pop stars used to be, I don't know if it's still this way because I don't listen to K-pop, but K-pop stars used to be like really closely policed, like they couldn't even have a boyfriend or girlfriend in public, and if it appeared that they even had a boyfriend or girlfriend, then the fans would get mad. It seems like a sort of public property type thing. Yeah. If you're someone visible, then you need to be available to everybody who's looking at you, which is mega fucked up. So what do you guys think about just in general, male stewardship of female purity? Like, is that something that you see culturally in other places besides America? And how does that look?
Are you saying things like father-daughter dances and like purity balls and that sort of thing?
Yeah, yeah. And like the thing where the dad's like, well, I'm going to be sitting on the porch with a shotgun.
Ugh. Gross. One of my cousins just gave, he didn't. They have a baby girl. And the first, like one of the first pictures that he posted on Instagram, the caption was like, gonna keep her locked up until she's 18. And I'm like, that is so fucking creepy that you've already sexualized your newborn baby in this like bizarro policing of her sexuality.
I own
and
this
she
kid.
Just was, she was just born.
Yeah.
And then I don't talk to him very much.
And then the, devil's advocate to this, but the devil's advocate to this is this, the safety, the size differential and the safety of a woman. Because the other thing we've talked about a lot on this podcast is sexual violence towards women, like the size differential when you're behind closed doors with somebody who's bigger than you, you know, and the fear, I think, that comes with that. I think that that is very real, but that's different than an ownership of the body and what that. What that looks like.
I mean, I think that that is, I think that's such a really, such a good point, Kieran. But I think that.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I think the root of the
Did you hear that, dear listener?
I adore every single person on this podcast. You guys know that. I'm really bad at faking that I like people. So bad at it. But I think that, that's absolutely true, that there is like danger in the world. But I also think that, that's a generous read on what I interpret as men telling on themselves. Like when a man is like, I'm going to, you know, no man's going to be alone with my daughter. It's like, what have you done?
100%. And that's the bigger, I mean, that I think that's something that I find quite triggering and angering is like this idea of like, again, it comes back to the virgin whore thing. It's like a woman is either your mom or your sister or someone to be respected in your family, or it's a woman I want to fuck.
Yeah,
that's how when you fuck women. That's like the Hulk. That's the Hulk. That's what everyone does when they want to have sexual relations with women.
I always thought that the Hulk was like analogous to an erect penis. Like it gets mad and
then it's especially because Mark Ruffalo is so like I'm sorry guys, and then he's like. And then he just like explodes. Yeah,
I like his Hulk.
Tapioca pudding everywhere. All right.
I love what you said about like men telling on themselves. It's so true. It's like when women are like, men are trash, and they're like, no, we're not. And then they have daughters, and they're like, be careful of men. Like,
Yeah.
And that's the thing. At Harvard, I just wanted to say at Harvard.
Oh, my God. I'm going to add it to the tally.
Thank you. Oh. Yeah, but let's add your pants to the tally. Your pants tally. All right. But there was, Wellesley had a thing called the fuck truck. It was, do you guys know about this?
What?
No.
Oh, yeah, this was a thing.
Wasn't in the reading. Tell me more.
It was a shuttle that went back and forth.
There was a shuttle that went back and forth from Wellesley, and it was referred to by undergraduates as the fuck truck that included, you know, young women from Wellesley who would come in and they were like trying to quote unquote trap or get with dudes from Harvard. And like they would come in to go to final clubs and like party for the weekend. But it's very much this idea of like, you know what?
We had that at Notre Dame too. I'm nodding with recognition. St. Mary's was across the lake, and we had the Sluttle.
You were just saying the virgin. The fuck truck and the Sluttle. Sluttle is, I mean, the wordplay. The pun is fun.
I mean,
fun,
Sluttle but... sounds like a Pokemon, but I'm like Squirtle turns into Sluttle. Okay, that's a very inside joke. No one Pokemon. Okay,
but just you know this idea of you know. Like who's desirable, why they're desirable. Like I remember always thinking, I was like, that's pretty fucked up. Like that, you know, just a truck full of women. Oh, we're trying to, you know,
it's a fucked up thing. Because it's like, what if they are coming over to Harvard to have sex with Harvard guys? Who cares?
Like they're just going to have a lot of bad sex. Yeah. you know, a lot of bad, sad,
oh, man,
shame-driven sex.
Yeah.
And people who are like, I'm going to go do my algorithm. All right.
I mean, I've seen like, I've had friends of friends who've like, have gotten it that when the married couples and the husband still polices like what the woman wears. In ways of like having her not be so... sexual when she's out or like wearing certain clothes. It's like it doesn't end once they've already been married and have slept with this person that there's still this like air of like making sure that their wife looks virginal. Am I the only one that has like
I don't have
an
any
extension?
Friends
oh, I,
like that.
I don't have any friends personally, but
I don't
like,
really interact with married people, but I feel like that's probably
but like friends of friends like who have told me stories about like this husband being like, oh yeah, he's very hard on his wife and what she wears.
Oh my
like,
God. Sucks, but I don't like, find it that surprising.
No, yeah.
And it's like doubly like, shitty that I don't.
We have a lot of parents who listen to this show. A lot of people who have, and a lot of people who have nieces and nephews. Like none of us are parents, but a lot of us have nieces and nephews or, you know, friends who have kids and stuff. And we were all little girls at one point. So what messages did you get about virginity as a girl that you found to be very either helpful for you growing up and being well-adjusted or something that you had to overcome?
So this is something I would actually really like to share is that my mother, like she got this, I must have mentioned sex or something when I was like 7 or 8, like when I was in like second grade. And I don't think that my mom had, she was never told about like having her period or like all of that stuff was kind of like much more TN vibes. You know, I've only been with your father. Kind of vibes. Very, very 18, very Jane Austen.
My mom's going to love that she's known for that.
Yeah. When I meet her, I'm going to be like, only,
she also, only been with your father.
She also doesn't like slamming doors.
Yeah,
and
she doesn't.
And that's the hill she'll die on.
So I think my mom wanted to like course correct on that. So when I was like, I want to say I was second grade. I was like, she got a book on like puberty and like we read it together. And so I felt like I remember it being like a little weird, like, but also you're so young at that point and you still really look up to your parents and you're not like developing your prefrontal cortex asshole like vibes of being a teenager. And I was like, I look back on that and I was very grateful that, you know, I got to learn about the human body and anatomy in a way that was like from a parent or somebody trusted, and in a way that was like pretty scientific and like really understanding what puberty looks like and what's going to happen to you and what sex is. And I remember thinking it was insane that people who didn't know each other would have sex with each other on their wedding night. I was like, I have a very distinct memory of being like, wait, what? So you meet a stranger and then you have sex on that evening?
Oh, you're talking about like an arranged marriage.
If it's an arranged marriage, but even if it's like, even this idea of like, you know what I mean? I was like, so you get to know someone for a year or two and then maybe you'd have sex with them. I was like, but you just have sex with them straight away. I was like, that's crazy talk. What, if you wouldn't do that with a friend or somebody that you know, that was like, I remember thinking, I was like, this is nuts. who came up with this system? Like being like 8, being like, this is nuts.
Priyanka, what messaging did you hear that was like helpful or hurtful to you?
I feel like messaging-wise, I don't know. I mean, I feel like there was not a lot of sex talk in my house. I feel like a lot of it, I mean, I had a book. There was a book, but it was like, here's a book, read. Do this yourself. And then, of course, I went to school in the Midwest, but it was like a public school. We had like, quote unquote, sex ed. It was not like abstinence-only education. So you like kind of learned like, here are parts. I'm like, this is what happens, whatever. But the TI stuff really did make me think about parenting, and like that was like one of the immediate thoughts. And like, I'm not a parent, I have no experience, I should not, like, don't take my advice as like an expert, but like,
I've never seen a child,
never interacted with a child.
When I see them, I push them and run away.
Exactly. Yeah. But like, it made me think about like the point of having kids and like TIs. It's like, you, in the way that they interacted, it's like that kid is probably afraid to go to you with anything. Yeah. And like, you probably don't have this like open communication because like the way your relationship is set up, like if you're going to like bulldoze through any privacy or like medical expert, like, I don't know. It seems like you want to set up an open, honest, like channel of communication to like talk to your kid, to make them feel comfortable to come to you when they have questions, like have a conversation like Kieran's parents did, where it's like, cool, like
Kieran's mother,
Kieran's mom, just mom, not dad.
Kieran's mother did.
Just mom. Did.
Yeah. Tian, did you learn anything helpful or destructive as a kid?
I mean, my parents, we never really talked about sex, and I have 3 other sisters, and we don't even talk about sex with each other. Really,
this is so crazy. So I'm the only person at this table who had an early sex talk with a parent, and I really think,
add that to the tally.
Well, that's really crazy. That's wild. You'll find this funny, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but I went to, and then there was a party, it was like a boy girl party when we were still in elementary school, because you're gonna love this, and it was like, and I think it was like, and then they played Spin the Bottle at that party. Not sure my mom knows this, but they played Spin the Bottle at that party, and then I was like reading like Judy Blume books, and I was like, oh, and then we could do this and this, and one girl was like, oh, Karen, she like reads books, they called me Karen in Florida, and I was like, and it was like, oh, Karen knows stuff about this too, and I was like, the knowledgeable one with no experience whatsoever, because it was like, I was like, well, you can learn a lot from books. And it was like, the more you read. Anyway, it was very funny. So
I could see, oh, I could see that happening.
Yeah.
I think it's all about, like, I remember checking out a book that was all about sex, my freshman or junior year. And I remember, like, hiding it from my parent, like, from my parents, because there was one section about LGBTQ youth. I remember reading that and just being like, this is a thing that can happen. But
they're going to know.
They're going to know from this book that I've earmarked one page. But, like, I think just, like, when your children ask questions, just be honest with them. Like, I feel like if I had just known more, or had, like, had someone talk to, like, if the schools actually had thoughtful discussions about sex and sex education when I got it more in, like, high school and college, I would have had such a better idea, and I think just a better skill set and knowledge base to, like, make judgments based on. But we were all, I was flying in blind and I had no idea. Mm-hmm, and I totally. Think that was the scariest part about it, that I was making decisions based on, like,
hearsay or from my friends, or just like from yeah, it'll yeah. be like the internet now or whatever it is. That's a hard one.
It makes me think, like, you have time if you're a parent or, like, an aunt, uncle, whatever, person who is close to a child, to prepare for this conversation and not be awkward. Like, I think if you enter the conversation in a way that shows that, like, you're uncomfortable, like, that's a way, maybe not always, but, like, to make whatever child you're talking to, like, then feel like this is, like, a shameful, bad, like, uncomfortable topic that they, like, don't want to interact about. Like, I think maybe projecting an attitude that, like, this is an okay thing to inquire about is also important to, like, make them feel comfortable.
I'm really surprised that there isn't more content about, or more open content about, this idea of, like, sexuality as a part of self-actualization, as a part of, like, your spirituality, as a part of your growth as a person. Like, you know, there's so much, like, self-help stuff, and, like, sexuality is, like, kind of left out of that entirely, as, like, part of a robust person or human being. There's a very different incorporation into what that part of a person is and how you experience it.
Mm-hmm. The standard model of, you know, PNV, virginity as a moment where you become a woman or become a man or become a whore or whatever it is that people are applying to you because you had sex. I think that once the sooner we free ourselves from those definitions, the less fucked up we all are going to be by this. Like, T.I. is not going to be wasting time going to the gynecologist.
putting sticky notes on his daughter's door.
Yeah. Gynecologists aren't going to have to waste their time explaining to parents that hymens go away for all kinds of reasons and it has nothing to do with sex. It just feels like we will save so much time, and we'll have time to do other things, like, you know, read books or
read
go on a walk.
When you asked me about virginity in the queer community, I totally forgot about this whole notion of gold star lesbians. Do you know what that term is?
No.
It's so fucked up. It's gold star lesbians are lesbians who have never had sex with men, like cis men. And so they've never had P in the V. But, like, when I first came out, I remember that was held to such a, like, you're special lesbian.
So you're
never,
like, a bad lesbian if you had.
Yeah, well, not bad, but it's like.
But you're not gold star.
You're not a gold star. No. And I remember, like,
oh my God,
hearing that, and I was like, wait a minute, this is so fucked up.
Yeah, like the idea of slightly tainted.
Yes, the idea of, like, a slightly tainted.
It's like the big sex idea.
It's like, you're tainted in some way. Tainted. It's just such a,
the,
like,
The taint.
Can you call this episode the taint?
No.
Please.
You know what?
Please, Erin, please.
This is, like, the fifth episode in a row where on the mic, most of it hasn't been, like, in the show, but there's always been taint conversations. Like, I feel like we need to have a special little segment of the show called Grundle Time.
That's hilarious.
It's just between two things. You can't really do anything with it. Okay.
It's the isthmus of Panama.
The grundle of the show. Okay, this was a great conversation, ladies. I'm so glad you're here to talk about it with me. We have to take a break, though. And when we come back, it's The Hills We'll Die On.
Hey,
Hey, Hysteria listeners, it's almost Christmas, at least according to Lifetime and Hallmark's extremely thirsty marketing for this year's crop of deliciously bad holiday fare, because we were so inspired by the forthcoming Vanessa Hudgens film, The Night Before Christmas. Alyssa, that's night with a K. With a K. And because we so desperately need to pre-record an episode that will allow us to take a week off to let our families know we're still alive, we're going to celebrate with the first annual Hysteria Bad Movie Pitches Contest. Alyssa, tell them the rules of our holiday bad holiday pitch contest.
Okay, here are the rules. The tone is Lifetime or Hallmark. You have to come up with the title before you come up with the actual plot of the movie. The title has to be based on a lyric from a Christmas holiday song, a line from a Christmas holiday poem, or a common holiday saying. Puns are welcome.
Oh, good.
I mean, what would we do? We couldn't have the contest if they weren't, because then you couldn't participate.
Right. Exactly.
Your deliberately bad Lifetime or Hallmark holiday movie synopsis should top out at about a paragraph. If you'd like, you can imagine who would play the leads to paint a more vivid portrait of how horrible yet irresistible your film would be. Submissions can be sent to hysteria@crooked.com. Please use the subject line bad holiday movie pitch so we can find yours and make sure it gets read. The deadline to participate is Friday, December 13th. That's right, Friday the 13th, because we, Spooky, and our favorites will be read on our holiday episode airing on Christmas Eve.
We will enlist some elves at Crooked Media. Let's be honest, that's probably me and you, Alyssa. It's Caroline and Juliet, and maybe we'll have Pundit weigh in to pick the winners, which your lovely Hysteria co-host will attempt to read without laughing on a very special listener-heavy holiday episode of Hysteria. If you're good, Santa might just send our favorites a little something something, not coal. So
never coal.
Never coal. So send us your bad pitches at hysteria@crooked.com, and we cannot wait to read them.
Ho ho horrible.
Hello everybody. Welcome back. We've gotten to the part of the show where we take really strong stances on things that don't really matter that much. It's the hills that we all die on. Let's get started with a listener hill.
My hill is about escalator etiquette. If you think that it's okay to stand in the middle of a stair on an escalator and not move, or you and your buddy just stand side by side when there are people behind you, you're a garbage person.
Everyone's nodding.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. The right lane is for people who are standing, and the left lane are for people who have somewhere to fucking be. I don't care if you have a kid, put your kid in front of you. There's no fucking excuse. Escalators are not elevators.
Oh, I love this.
I
hill.
Love yeah. this hill.
I love this.
Do you think this woman curses regularly, or were those F-bombs that she's like throwing out?
I think that she's usually saying the F-bombs under her breath.
Yes.
Yes.
Fucking, like she's
but
walking
here,
around.
She was allowed
she
to.
Was allowed to.
And I love
off.
That for I love, her and for us.
Yeah. I love that for her, for sure. You know, I feel the same way about escalators.
I do too.
Some of us 100%. Like, some of us like to walk up them.
Yeah.
And you it's feel, good exercise, or you have, or you're in a rush,
yes,
yeah. for a meeting or whatever, and it's yeah. like there should be, and then somebody else is like, oh, ba-dum, ba-dum.
Yeah, even more so those rules on the like moving walkways.
Oh yeah,
at the airports,
anyone who's in a hurry,
people are in a hurry and don't stand on the left. It makes me so mad.
Or the whole like sometimes there's like a gaggle, like a family gaggle,
yeah,
and they're all just like,
get your family in line.
Yeah.
Take a lesson from the ducks and the geese.
Yeah.
Get them to walk in a line behind you.
Get them
We're not
row.
Migrating. This isn't V time.
What kind of a flock are you, messy ass?
That's what I'll say on the moving walkways. I'll just, if they're all scat, I'll be like, messy ass ducks? What the hell are you doing?
Oh, man.
Because it's like, is she insulting us? I'm so confused.
She called us ducks and that we're messy.
I don't get it.
I don't get it.
She definitely, they'd be like, she's not talking about us.
Yeah.
There has to be a duck in here.
There's got
to
be some ducks in the building.
We'll workshop that one.
I know.
I like it.
No, I'm just going to, yeah, I'm going right. I'm not going to workshop that.
I've got a hill to die on this week. This is a little bit of a deep cut from the Laura Ingalls Wilder library. When I was a kid, did you guys read Laura Ingalls Wilder?
Yes.
Okay. So there's one of the books is called On the Banks of Plum Creek. I think it's like the third or the fourth book in the series. And in that book, she and her family live in a dugout house, like a house that is dug out from the side of a hill. And I had a realization.
A dream.
Which I thought it sounded so cozy, like being Winnie the Pooh, or like a, you know, like a like a Richard Scarry character that drives a carrot car or whatever. But I realized this week, she just lived in a fucking cave. It's not cozy. Caves are cold and wet, and I bet it was very uncomfortable. And all of my notions as a child of like, God, I'm going to live in a dugout someday. It was like, oh no, that's a dirt hole. She lived in a dirt hole. That's horrible. That's horrible. No wonder she grew up to be kind of a jerk. Laura Ingalls Wilder. Read about it. Wikipedia.
Yeah, I know nothing.
She grew
about
up in a hole.
She grew up as a kind of transient pioneer, and she was in Wisconsin, and then she was in Iowa. She was in South Dakota. She was in Minnesota. Her family moved around a lot. And
very
at one
cute
point,
book covers.
Yes, very cute book covers. And at one point, she lived in a hole.
I'd be mean if I lived in a hole.
Yeah,
I'm mean, and I don't
be so
live in a
romantic.
Hole.
I've always wanted to like live in the like side of a mountain.
You wanted to be a hobbit?
Yeah.
Or a dwarf?
Or a dwarf, yeah.
There's no natural light.
Okay, you're bringing up really good points.
I guess I wouldn't like it.
Yeah, I just don't.
Never mind.
The hill I'll die on this week is it wasn't cozy at all, and I was wrong. I've been wrong all these years, and I'm big enough to admit it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like that hill.
Thank you.
You don't want to live in a hill.
No, you don't want to live in a hill. Kieran, do you want to go next?
I will. Okay.
Sorry.
When I'm ill, I want hard drugs. Not oil of oregano. Cocaine.
Medicine.
Cocaine and meth. no, I want like, I don't want an oil of oregano or a crystal or a lemon.
Or an elderberry syrup.
I don't want an elderberry syrup. I don't want something that's all natural. I want something that's going to murder everything in my body. I want...
This tracks with Kieran.
I want Western medicine. I want Western medicine, like traditional doctor hospital vibe medicine.
I want bloodletting, leeches.
No, that's old school.
Oh, okay.
I want like an antiseptic. I want something that's going to numb me. So
she wants a Z-Pack.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to get just like laid out flat by some drugs and then popped back because they've taken everything out of your body.
Correct.
Is that bad though with antibiotics?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like, aren't we like
it gets rid of good and bad.
Sure.
No, we're like, aren't we like, isn't that a superbug thing?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Sometimes there'll be people I know who are like, I have a headache, but I'm not gonna take Advil. And I'm like, then shut the fuck up.
See, I'm like that. I forget that Advil is a thing, but like when I'm like sick,
no,
I'm like, yeah.
I
forget that it exists, and then I'm like, oh duh.
Advil. Yeah. Advil's great.
Yeah. Dan, do you wanna go next?
Yeah. So, I was looking for a restaurant recently on Yelp, and I will just have to say the hill that I would die on is I need everyone to stop using orgasmic to describe food. I don't like it. I can't stand it. It's not funny. You Yelp users saying that, like, the food was so good it was orgasmic is not funny to me. No food has ever made me cum. And it's true.
But those pants.
No bite of food has ever made me climax. So I just want everyone to stop using that word to describe a food experience.
People need new words.
People need new words.
People need to stop using mouth words for the genitals and genital words for the mouth. Like, you can't call somebody, like, when someone is like, they're tasty or you look like a snack, I find that... Don't switch them.
You want to keep different holes.
Yeah, different holes.
Delicious
different words.
Is for food. Orgasmic is for people.
Yeah.
What about delicious people and orgasmic food?
Well, I mean, for cannibals, cannibals who like to jerk off with carrots, fine. that applies, I guess. Okay.
Yeah, that's my hill.
I respect it.
Yeah, I'm a Puritan about my Yelp reviews.
All right, Priyanka, do you want to bring us home?
Yeah, I think Kieran inspired me to get the people mad.
Okay.
I had two hills, and then this is a little more of a antagonistic one. I think when you are out to eat at a restaurant, not talking fast casual or like a Chipotle or whatever, I think guacamole is the dumbest possible order. Everyone has fucking had it. It is a crowd place. You're usually ordering it at like a place where you don't, like if I'm at a dinner and I don't know everybody that well. It's like, okay, like a bunch of people. It's like, fine. It's an easy order. It's like, no one's going to be upset by it. It's so inoffensive. But like, live a little. Try something different. Everyone's had a fucking guacamole. It's not going to be the best guacamole of your life. Try something new. That's my hill.
So what?
Agreed.
You sounds like you're referring to a very specific dinner. And you wanted you.
No,
like,
no, no.
What are you looking at? A stuffed mushroom, a mozzarella stick? What are you trying to? How are you trying to live?
Okay, at the dinner.
Also,
at the dinner,
those
I
are
was
my
at.
Suggestions.
Yeah.
A stuffed mushroom and a mozzarella stick.
Okay, I think a mozzarella stick is also like a try. It depends on where you are. If mozzarella stick is the only option, if you're like dealing with things that you've already like everything you've seen before, fine, go with what you like. But if there are new things on the menu,
yes, agreed.
Try them. You're at a restaurant. You can make guacamole at your house. You can buy it anywhere. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I'm always, like, I agree.
I like my comfort foods. I get it. But like, if you're going out, why not?
Get something
Live
you
a
can't
little.
Make.
Yeah, get something yeah. you can't make.
Yeah. I always get a souffle if it's an option.
Oh, ooh.
I always try to go for some like weird seafood appetizer. Maybe that's why people don't ask me to do it.
I get scared of prawns with heads on, so I can't. I'm like visceral.
Oh, I
like,
love them.
I'm scared of them.
So just to be clear,
they're
guys,
delicious.
Are we talking about a spinach dip? Like, what are we?
No, at the restaurant I was at where I first introduced this take, and everyone I was with was like, oh, what the hell? There was a white bean dip on the menu, and I was like, hey, that sounds interesting. We're looking for like a dip type thing. Why don't we try
it? I would have voted
that?
You down.
Yeah, everyone was like,
but then I was like, yeah, let's try it. And then it's like a white, I love the way you're
know,
so passionate.
So
and the
excited.
Thing that you're excited for is a
white
bean
dip.
It's just like the worst thing I've ever heard.
It was
heard.
More than
it's
I just
really worse than your hell.
It wasn't bad.
It's bad. That's
damn
well,
it.
That's
why did you
bad.
Ruin my
A white bean
You didn't
dip?
Have to do this to me. I know. I was really excited. I was like, she's going to say something. Ceviche. She's gonna say no. I think ceviche is hard to eat.
What?
I think it's hard to eat in a shared dinner.
No, it's not. It's delicious.
But if you're ordering it as an individual thing, if it's a shared thing, it's hard to eat. It is. It is hard to share.
I thought it was gonna be like some tapa thing with like all little things.
Yes.
With
okay.
Like,
that's
I thought it was
good.
Gonna be something like that. But yeah. the white bean.
I was not
that
ready
makes
for
me
the
think,
white
I have
bean
a friend.
Dip.
I have a friend who says that there's only six things worth eating. And it was like when you said white bean dip, it's
it
like
was good.
You lost all of us.
It was good.
Look, you guys, stop interfering with Priyanka's attempt to live her truth. She is living her white bean dip truth. And we can all go back to our basic-ass guacamole lives.
Yeah, you're right.
But she's living her white bean dip truth. Okay, guys, this was great. This is all the time we have today. Kieran, thank you for stopping by. Tien, thank you for stopping by. Priyanka, thank you as always
thank
for
you.
Making the long journey down the hall. And thanks to Alyssa Mastromonaco for calling in. There will be more hysteria for you next week. Hysteria is a product of Crooked Media. Caroline Reston is our producer. Our editor is Sarah Barrett, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer. Thank you to Juliet Beckstrand for production support, and to our digital team, Elijah Cohn and Nadina Melkonian, for filming and editing our video content every week. Get me some. Give up.